Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host today, Jim Werbel, along with my co-host, Ursula. Welcome, Ursula.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Local Talk. KHOI is 3 years old this month, and we would like you to mark your calendars and join us on August 23rd. We want to celebrate with you. There will be two things happening. Iowa's own renowned media reformer and former FCC commissioner Nicholas Johnson will be speaking in Ames in KHOI's honor. He'll be coming from Iowa City to do that, where he lives these days, and he'll be speaking about upheavals in our media world and the future of media at the First United Methodist Church at Kellogg and 6th in Ames. That will be at 3 p.m. this Sunday, the 23rd. And then please join us afterwards for a reception and party at Bar La Tosca at Burnett and Main Street from 4:30 to 6:30. All events are free, and we heartily invite you to join us in this celebration. Should be a lot of fun.
Well, today's Wednesday, which means we leave Ames to find people, stories, and events throughout our listening area. Today we explore two wonderful places for you to visit. Conrad Kramer has traveled from Coon Rapids to join us here at KHOI. Mr. Kramer is the executive director of the White Rock Conservancy in Coon Rapids. We are very excited to have him here and talk about the Conservancy, a truly beautiful and special treasure of Iowa. Later on, we have a longer-than-usual version of our Tuning Into Iowa Agriculture segment. We'll have Dean and Judy Henry from the Berry Patch. They will be joining us live. Stick with us. We are going to explore two really wonderful places this hour.
Looking forward to all of this. Before we get started, though, we want to check in briefly with our reporter in the field. There's a special story happening right now in Decorah, Iowa, and KHOI's environmentalist Pat Schlarbaum is on the scene. Pat, are you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Hi, Pat. Hi. So, Pat, what are you doing in Decorah?
Well, today I'm going to be working with the Raptor Resource Project members, Neil Reddick and Dave Kester. The Decorah Eagle Nest Cam, the second nest, has come down, and it has all the electronics that people have enjoyed throughout the world, and it's our intention to construct a platform nest, if you will, in a crotch next to that tree that came down. So the original tree has its nest. This will be the choice that possibly these adults will honor. If not, I guess there's other raptors that may take it on.
So the Decorah Eagles have two nests?
Yes, they constructed a second nest about 3 years ago. They do this. The eagles generally have a second nest. I think it has something to do with the backup in case something disturbs them at the original site. The original nest is still doing well. It's about 100 yards from the site that we're going to be working today.
Pat, why did the nest fall down?
Oh, it was just in a cottonwood tree that the wind took out. Some of these severe summer storm took it out.
And now you're building a platform, and you're hoping the eagles will return and build their nest on that platform?
Yeah, well, it's really made of sticks. It's we won't use any domestic lumber, but it'll be in the fork of the cottonwood tree that was next to the one that we were at, that they utilized for about the last 3 years.
So are the eagles around anywhere?
Well, I've been watching. You know, they were right here by, there's a retention pond right by the fish hatchery, and I haven't seen any activity yet at Bob Anderson's memorial a couple weeks ago. The female was here. It was a little bit later in the morning, feeding, getting trout, but this retention pond is separate from the fish hatchery, and I think it's just loaded with trout also.
So to review, this is the famous Decorah Eagles who are become worldwide fame of reputation because there's a video cam that shows how they raise their young, and the nest where this cam was located is the nest that fell down?
That's correct. correct. Yeah.
And so now you're today, you're going to do this today? You're going to build this platform?
Yeah, that's the goal. And also we have another nest site on the upper Iowa River that we're going to try to install a camera. These cameras, where we can put hard electricity to it, the solar collectors and those type of cameras have been shown to be kind of uncooperative, or you can't really rely on them, unreliable. And so where we have the direct electricity, it works out a whole lot better. So this will be utilizing this infrastructure, if you will, of the existing hardwire to this second site.
And just to mention again, Bob Anderson, the person who was the director of the Raptor Research Center and who built the video cam, passed away just last month, kind of strangely synchronicity with the falling of the nest. And so this is really the work going on, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a real good way of putting it. There's and Neil Reddick has worked shoulder to shoulder with Bob throughout this Eagle Cam project. And Neil also has quite a production called The American Eagle. He's a videographer for the National Geographic. So this is something that they wanted permission to proceed with, and it seemed like a worthy cause. There was a great horned owl that was trying to utilize this second nest for a while. So if the eagles don't adopt it, if they should return to their previous nest, fine. But we'll probably have something utilizing our efforts.
And if you go to the webcam, you can actually see videos of the great horned owls checking out the nest and seeing if they want to stay there. So thank you, Pat. So good luck today with building the platform, and thank you for calling in and letting us know what's going on.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care.
Bye for now.
It's always interesting to find out what's happening with the Decor Eagles. It's always changing.
Yeah, it's quite a story. And thank you, Pat, KHOI reporter and naturalist. And he's on the scene in Decorah repairing the habitat of the Decorah webcam eagles.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for joining us. We are honored and excited to have Conrad Kramer, Executive Director of the White Rock Conservancy, with us. You've traveled here from Coon Rapids, and thank you so much for coming here to speak with us today.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. What exactly, for starters, where exactly is Coon Rapids? Where did you come from today?
Well, Coon Rapids is just an hour and 15 minutes west, a little bit southwest of Ames. So it's not very far, just out 30 and then head south.
And then on 141, right? It's 30 to 169 to 141 west.
Yep, that would work. Yep.
So it's really just right around the corner from Story County and Ames.
Yep.
Would you describe to us what is the White Rock Conservancy?
Well, White Rock is two things. White Rock is a place. So the White Rock Valley has been called by the local people for generations. It's a beautiful river valley that extends along the Middle Raccoon River, and White Rock Conservancy is a nonprofit land trust that was founded 10 years ago to accept an amazing 5,500 acre gift by the Garst family. And to steward it as a landscape and to pursue our three-part mission out there on the landscape.
So to be clear, a land trust in a sense is a piece of private property that's been turned into a property for the public to use and to visit?
Well, there are a lot of different kinds of land trusts, but in our case, yes. We steward and manage this large property, and one of the important parts of our mission is to open it to the public, very much like a recreation area, like a state recreation area. And we also pursue other aspects of our mission. One is sustainable agriculture. We practice sustainable agriculture, and we work to demonstrate sustainable agriculture for Iowans and for people in the Midwest. And we also are working to restore our landscape into what it used to be pre-settlement times. And, in fact, we're the largest private restoration effort in the state. And, in fact, we're the third largest recreation area in the state. And here we are, just a nonprofit.
Why is the land geographically and geologically significant at White Rock?
Well, it is. It is very special. It's we're right on the boundary between two landforms in Iowa. We're right at the southern tip of the Des Moines Lobe, which is an area that was glaciated about 15,000 years ago. And that's what left all the wet prairie pothole area in Iowa that the pioneers found to be very fertile. And once they drained it, they could make good use of it. But right there is where the last glaciers were. And just below that, we're right on the boundary between the Des Moines Lobe and the drift and the southern Iowa drift plain, which has not been glaciated for 600,000 years. So we're right there where all the terminal moraines are and other –
Where all the what are?
Well, when the glaciers came down through Iowa, the last one, where they stopped – you know, plowing the landscape is right at White Rock. And so they left these hills, you know, which is basically where the glaciers plowed up a hill, you know, all along through White Rock. So we have these terminal moraine features. We have these rocky knobs that are basically crevasse dumps, you know, where the glaciers started to melt and these crevasses opened up and all the rubble fell down through and ended up giving us these little hills that are very special. Also, when the glacier sat there in 15,000 years and started to melt, it created this huge torrent of water along the Middle Raccoon River. And the Middle Raccoon River was very powerful at that point and dug down into the bedrock. And so at White Rock, you can see almost 200-foot bluffs. You're looking at 230 million years of erosion there. And you can see 230 million years of strata. And then just on the other side of White Rock, on the southern part, is the driftless area, the southern drift plain, where it hasn't been glaciated for a long time. And so you have, 600,000 years of erosion. And so we have a lot of terrain along the river, these river valleys and these valleys and ravines running up the creek. So we've got a lot of elevation change and a lot of interesting terrain, which you don't usually associate with Iowa.
Yeah, it's I think the word bucolic comes to mind. It takes on this very charming, beautiful rolling hills and valleys.
It is beautiful. And another special thing about it is since the terrain was rough, some of those areas out at White Rock never felt the plow. And so we actually have some prairie remnants and some savanna remnants, some rare sand prairie remnants. So it's a special wild place.
And the Garsts, just tell us real briefly who they were. It was a farm originally, the land.
Yeah, the Garst family is a famous Iowa family, starting with Roswell Garst, who got in right on the leading edge of the whole green, revolution, and developed a relationship with Henry Wallace and was right on the cutting edge of the whole hybrid seed corn part of the green revolution. And he was the one who developed a relationship with the Russians, and when Nikita Khrushchev came to visit in 1959, he visited the Garst farm. So
it sounds, in a way, conservancy. The concept of conservancy sounds kind of abstract when you talk about it, but when one goes there, one discovers right away there's nothing abstract about it. It is stunningly beautiful.
White Rock is a very special place.
Yeah,
and it's a big place.
Yeah, and it's really not an exaggeration to say that it's stunning. One is immediately struck by the breathtaking quality of the landscape, and there's really an intense awareness of nature when you go there. It's hard to put it into words. It's a palpable sense of power and integrity of nature when its systems are protected and supported and are kind of coming into the foreground. And you get a glimpse of Iowa's true natural character as a landscape, and it's really very beautiful. And you recently completed a whole new trail system that makes the land an experience more accessible to visitors, and we want to talk about this. But let's start off with talking about the oak savannas. This is one of the most remarkable and noticeable things at the Conservancy. When I was first there on the land, the first time I visited, I was immediately impressed by an extraordinary sense of beauty and grace in the landscape, and I noticed there were enormous sweeping trees, but I didn't know why it was so beautiful and what was really what it meant. I didn't really know what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the oak savannas.
Well, the oak savanna really is, more than anything, our claim to fame at White Rock. It's really what makes us special. I mean, these Oak Savannas is, you could just call it, a kind of a prairie ecology under these wide-spreading trees, which are these bur oaks and these shagbark hickories. And so what it is it's a grassy area with trees, interspersed trees. And the trees that grow up in that environment do have these beautiful sweeping, branches and these beautiful shapes. And, what that is Iowa used to be 15% to 19% savanna, these oak savanna before the settlers came. And in fact, much of the Midwest was that way. Unfortunately, one of the first things that the pioneers did is that they decided they wanted to move into these beautiful areas, which is understandable. But they also suppressed fire because, fire just destroys things. And what they didn't realize is that these oak savannas can't live without fire. And so in Iowa and throughout the Midwest, basically Iowa has, virtually zero oak savanna left. Not anything to speak of. But at White Rock, we have a full 1,000 acres that we're working to restore. And the way we do that is, these old forests start to fill in without fire with all kinds of other kinds of trees. And then they get deep and dark and entangled. And
yeah, that's what's so distinctive about this. You're accustomed to seeing forests in Iowa as being very kind of dense and full of lots of little trees. And when you go to the White Rock Conservancy, the forests are very kind of open and clean, and the land under the trees is very accessible.
Yes, it is, and it's also very beautiful. Okay, these beautiful trees, and then these flowers underneath the trees, and then just the ground itself is covered with these beautiful grasses and other plants. So it is beautiful. It's also incredibly productive. I mean, you have all of these, like a prairie, you have all these plants under the trees generating all this biomass and flowers and seeds. And then you have the trees overhead, all the oaks and the hickories, and in the wetter places, the walnuts, all dropping all of these nuts. And so it's incredibly productive and really supports a lot of wildlife. And in fact, we have a herd of 300 deer there at White Rock. But there are also species that absolutely can't live anywhere else than in these oak forests. And, animals like or birds like the red-headed woodpecker that is disappearing throughout the Midwest. So it's beautiful and it's productive and very special, and it's a highly diverse habitat.
One of the things noticeable, too, is the trees, they bend down. They reach down to the earth. They aren't reaching up to the sky like you usually see. They're really coming down and creating these very low, heavy branches.
Yeah.
Must be a lot of work trying to maintain that oak savanna. It'll fill in if you don't maintain it.
Yeah, it is a lot of work, especially when you first get started. When you first get started, you can't run fire through a forest like that, because these other trees, these trees that have filled in, they're trying to control their environment. And what they do is they drop these little thin leaves and like maples. And what they're trying to say is, don't burn here. These little thin leaves, they get wet, they pack down, and they try to control their environment. Oak trees, on the other hand, they drop these leaves that are, dry and curly, and they're trying to say, burn. We want our area to burn, because the oak trees know that if a fire comes through, it'll wipe out all the competition. It'll wipe out their own seedlings too, but their own seedlings will come back from the roots. So when you first start to do this work, you have to go in with chainsaws. It's incredibly time-consuming and labor-intensive. But after that, you can start using fire. And fire is our least expensive and most important tool in maintaining these beautiful areas.
You actually invite people to come and volunteer to help with the fires when you do that.
We do. It's not hard work. We're almost completely mechanized, but we do need help. And a lot of people really enjoy burning things up. And hey, at White Rock, you can help us do it legally and actually help us maintain something really beautiful.
Wow. That's must be a sight to behold when those fires.
It certainly is.
It's a part of Iowa's history, too, to see a fire like that.
It is. In fact, the Native Americans here used fire to maintain these landscapes because they knew how productive they were. And they were, nut gatherers and hunters. And these forests are much more productive than the deep, dark forests of the Midwest today.
Now, mention again the other types of natural landscapes that you find. You have the oak savannas.
We have the oak savannas, and we have oak forests in places where it's just a little bit thicker, not as much sun gets through. But we also have about 1,000 acres of prairie that we're working to restore, including some really special sand prairie remnants and prairie remnants. Our sand prairie remnants are among the farthest east. I mean, you basically have to go almost to Omaha to find these sand prairies. So they're very special, highly diverse. And then we have about 300 acres of wetlands, but the wetlands we do have are primarily these wetland seeps that are, you know, exquisite and very, very special and rare. And what it is that in our part of Iowa, when the rain falls down, it permeates into the ground and finds these impermeable sandstone layers. And then they run along the sandstone layers till they get to the side of a hill. And then they just keep running out down the hill. So we have these hanging wetlands, these wetlands on the sides of hills that are really amazing.
They're full of flowers, too.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
So it's not totally true that Iowa was just a tall grass prairie. There was a whole lot more going on here.
Iowa's a big place, and there's lots of room for lots of different things to happen. And fortunately, a White Rock, being where we are and as big as we are, we encompass we're pretty representative of a lot of different parts of Iowa.
Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, along with my co-host, Jim Werbel, and our guest today is Conrad Kramer, who is the executive director of the White Rock Conservancy. We're so pleased to be talking about the Conservancy. And as mentioned before, Iowa is really an area that's heavily cultivated, and the White Rock Conservancy is not only a special and beautiful preservation of nature, it's also a working farm. So it's a combination of what you'd call land stewardship, farming and preserving nature. And it's really a study of cohabitation with nature. Mm-hmm. And there are places that you can stay at the Conservancy. There's camping. There's houses where you can stay. And it's really an easy distance from Ames and Story County. It's in Coon Rapids, about an hour's drive from Ames. So you just put in a new trail system.
We did.
So tell us about the trails. Tell us about the system.
Well, after raising money for 7 years, we finally had enough to go ahead with our master plan. And so this year we're just finishing up putting in about 20 miles of new trail. And we already had 9 miles of a aggregate double track in the north part of White Rock, but now we've transitioned into a whole new main loop, which is a double track, a multi-use. Anyone can use it, and it circles the entire landscape, and that's a 12 mile loop. And we also have constructed 13 miles of purpose-built mountain bike trail on all that wonderful terrain up above the river. We own both sides of 8 miles of the Middle Raccoon River, and that's where the majority of these mountain bike trails are. And we've also built 6 miles of single-track equestrian trail through the woods to places no one was able to get to before. So we have trails for all kinds of users.
For hikers, horseback riders, and mountain bikes, right?
Mountain bikers. And also if we offer our gaiters for rent for anyone who doesn't want to hike in or maybe has a mobility challenge or maybe just has young kids, anybody can get far into our landscape.
What is a gaiter?
It's a John Deere ATV, a two-seater or four-seater with a bed in the back. It's like almost like a small car or maybe a small Jeep. People can rent one from us and get out into the landscape, motor all the way back, even if they just want to fish. You know, we have 12 fishing ponds back there. If they just want to explore the landscape, some people motor in to stay in one of our remote cabins.
And then there's always the river.
There's always the river.
Right. So you can travel through the land on the river itself.
That is a paddler's trail, and we do offer canoes and kayaks for rent, and we do the canoe shuttles. So it's definitely it's an important part of our mission to give people access to White Rock. And that's what this trail system is about in our services and renting this recreational equipment and in providing places for people to stay, whether it's primitive camping or beds in modern accommodations. White Rock is, sure, we're a private nonprofit, but we are very much like a state park, and we encourage people to come to White Rock and enjoy us like a state park.
What is a bench cut? What's a bench cut?
Well, on our that really refers mostly to our mountain bike trails. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we were trying to do is to build trails that were not too expensive to build, but also trails that were environmentally sustainable too. So we didn't want to go in and put down asphalt. And so a bench cut is just where you cut your trail for mountain bikes, a 3-foot trail, into the side of a hill. You just notch it out. You leave a 2 to 5% slope so water can run off. That's what a bench cut is. And the theory is if you build trails on a slope, they're actually going to be more sustainable because water won't collect in them. And water is the true enemy. It's not traffic. So it's all about drainage. Yeah. And of course, along the slopes is a really beautiful place to build a trail because you have all these views of the river valley.
So. Do you put a lot of thought into the impact of the trail on the land before you build it?
We do. In fact, we had years and years of time, and we spent money on it, too, to look at our landscape and determine, you know, where was the best places that we wanted people to go so they could see special things, but also where we wanted them to not go, to not disturb special things. So there was a lot of science behind this trail and where it goes, where it doesn't go. We created all these baseline studies of the ecology in the places where the trail is going. And in the years ahead, we'll be able to monitor impacts from this additional trail usage.
So you want people to use these trails, though, now?
Absolutely.
You want people to come.
Yeah, $1.7 million of investment. We're the third largest recreation area in the state. We are trying to be the best recreation destination in the state. And while people are there, we hope they're like you. I hope that they look around and say, what is different here? There's something stunningly different mm-hmm. and beautiful. And with that, maybe they'll look at our savannas and say, gee, you know, why shouldn't other people be working on restoring savannas across the state? Or maybe they'll walk past some of our agricultural test areas and say, you know, and learn about what we're doing and realize that, you know, agriculture can be profitable and sustainable and not impact our water quality downstream. So we want people to come to White Rock and enjoy themselves, but we also want them to come to learn.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if one wants to see an example of an oak savanna, I think at Ada Hayden Park, there's a small project going on where they're cultivating an oak savanna. So mm-hmm. you can kind of get a little bit of sense of how beautiful that is, but obviously it's nothing compared to seeing these vast landscapes at the White Rock Conservancy. And there are a lot of animals. Last time I was there, I ran into a large family of turkeys mm-hmm. that were running around. And there were a lot of deer. One doe was determined to chase me off, which was interesting. She kept standing there and stamping her feet at me, but mm-hmm. she didn't quite dare do more than that. But there's definitely a lot of animals there. And A lot of birds, yeah.
There are, and we still have beaver and otter mm-hmm. and mink in our rivers. We have a bobcat in our forests, foxes, coyotes. So it's a wild place.
And now you do have some events. The last weekend you had the yearly star party. I'm told that White Rock Conservancy is one of the darkest places.
It is.
And you have one of the darkest skies in Iowa.
We do. We're just in the right place here in the state between all of these, far enough away from all these major cities that we do have one of the darkest skies. And we do have a star party. In fact, the Ames Amateur Astronomy Club comes out to White Rock once a year in August, and they camp out for half a week and do their thing. And on the Friday nights that just passed, they invite the public to come out and look through their telescopes, which is really amazing. You can go out. 10 years ago, you would have thought that only the Hubble could see these things. But mm-hmm. now these astronomers with their great telescopes and their laptops can see amazing things, you know, nebula and galaxies, and you're standing there right next to them. So it's pretty amazing. And that's part of our mission, too, is to, you know, the dark sky is a natural resource also, and White Rock is committed to trying to preserve that. And, in fact, in our community, we have a dark sky ordinance. So it's all about controlling light and it really makes a difference. You see people come out there that haven't been out of the city for a long time, or kids that have never seen the Milky Way, mm-hmm. and you have them take that in, and suddenly they feel like they're, you know, they didn't realize that they lived in, you know,
such a big universe.
Such a big mm-hmm. universe, right?
Yeah. And you have various other events at the Conservancy. Do you have a website where one can find out?
Sure. Our website is whiterockconservancy.org, and White Rock is White Rock Conservancy is one word. And we have lots of information there, including trail conditions. We also have a White Rock Conservancy Facebook page, including one for specifically for equestrians and another one specifically for mountain bikers. And trail conditions are posted there, too. So, yeah, we have a lot of information out there for people. And just remember that whiterockconservancy.org is one word.
Okay. So, and this trail system is really brand new, right?
It's brand new, and and it's getting rave reviews. We've gotten some very serious mountain bikers out there already this year, and they are completely amazed that White Rock Iowa has terrain like this, and you know our trails have a wonderful flow, and they're lots of really satisfying downhills and some really challenging ascents. And, you know, some mountain bikers love the climb, too. And, in fact, some of our double track have some great ascents and descents. So all that elevation and all that beauty really seems to make a difference.
And there's also a wonderful sense of naturalness. There's no gates or you're basically just there and it's available to you. And nobody – basically, you kind of register yourself. There's no – guards at the door. It's all very kind of natural and accessible, so it's almost like you're just kind of stumbling upon somebody's beautiful land and they're letting you just kind of, you know, go on it and look around, and it's really that simple.
Is there an entry fee?
Well, one thing that sometimes confuses people about White Rock is we don't have a single gate. There are many, many trailheads, as you might think, over such a big area. So you can access White Rock through a number of trailheads. There's no entry fee. There's no parking fee. There's no gate fee.
There's no gates.
There's no gates. There's no trail fee for pedestrians. We do ask them to consider a dollar or two donation to help us with trail maintenance. Mountain bikers, though, we do charge $3 a day, and equestrians is $10 a day. It does cost money to build and maintain trails. So
basically it amounts to a box and a kiosk where you, you know, you kind of pay on your own free will. So it's really a very, very accessible place. Real quick before we stop talking, can you just tell us real briefly about the project that is being conducted with the Leopold Center here at Iowa State University at the White Rock Conservancy?
Sure. Well, so it's a Prairie Strips project. And so what we have is we have these two 80-acre farming farm fields, crop fields that we are using for the study. And on one, we're just kind of using – they're very similar to each other, and they're right next to each other. And on one, we're using kind of traditional farming practices. And we're monitoring the results of, sediment loss or topsoil loss and erosion and what nutrients are running off the landscape. And then on this other one, we're using, all of our best techniques for controlling erosion and for improving soil health. And, you know, including, no-till and cover crops. But in the waterways, which is one of the techniques, where we're not just planting grass, brome grass in the waterways to control erosion, we're planting prairie. And the reason we're doing that is that one of the things that most people agree on is that Iowa is experiencing climate change. And farmers all agree that the rain events are getting larger. And, you know, 5-inch, 6-inch rain events twice a year now are getting very difficult. And in a situation like that, a waterway, even a nice big one, the grasses will just lay over under a deluge like that, and you'll have erosion. But prairie won't. Prairie has a lot more woody plants in it, and so it won't lay over. And so that's the test, and we'll be able to test one against the other. The other nice little thing about prairie strips is you're actually building a little bit of habitat, too. And there are plenty of songbirds that really love prairie strips because they're very territorial. And once they have their own prairie strip, then it's very clearly theirs. So and also it's habitat for pollinators, and pollinators are taking a big hit these days.
Yeah, I noticed there's a lot of milkweed at the Conservancy and a lot of monarchs there.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Well, anything else we need to talk about before we say goodbye to you?
Well, just say that, you know, we are we look like and we behave like a state park, but we are a nonprofit. And we would just ask that anyone that comes to White Rock and falls in love with it remembers that we could use their help.
Okay. And we've been speaking with Conrad Kramer. He's the executive director of White Rock Conservancy. And why don't you give us the website one more time if so somebody mm-hmm. wants to look into it?
Yep, whiterockconservancy.org, all one word.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I look forward to going there.
Oh, great. Hope to see you.
Standing on these mountains and plains, far away from the rolling ocean, still my dry land heart can say, I've been sailing all my life now, never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue old home. Sun, my sail, and moon, my rudder, as I ply the starry sea, leaning over the edge in one, casting questions into the deep, drifting here with my ship's companions, all we kindred pilgrim souls, making our way by the lights of the heavens in our beautiful blue boat. Thanks to the waves upholding me, hail the great winds urging me on. Greet the infinite sea before me, sing the sky my sailor song. I was born upon the fathoms, never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Jim Werbel, hosting today's show with Ursula Rudenberg. Our Tuning into Agriculture segment today is a little bit longer than usual because we have Dean and Judy Henry here with us live from the Berry Patch. I've been going to their farm, which is located near Nevada, for 20 years to pick my own fruit. It's one of the summer things I need to do every summer in Iowa. Thank you for coming. What fruits can the visitors pick at the Berry Patch?
Well, right now we're into our early summer apples, but through the season we start with strawberries and gooseberries in June. We have the blueberries ready in July. We also have tart cherries, currants, and elderberries. So there's quite a lot you can do, and then we close with the pumpkins in October.
So there's a lot of things that people can pick. That's really nice. Your business has been in operation for almost
40 years now. Where did you first start?
We actually started growing strawberries when we were in University Village at Pamel Court, 1963. But we didn't do anything commercially until about 46 years ago. And we moved to the farm about 45 years ago and started with strawberries.
And it's grown a lot since, obviously, as Judy was talking about, a lot of different things to pick. Whose idea was it to start the business?
It's probably mine. I take the blame for that.
How did you feel about that, Judy? We said, let's start doing this business.
Well, it sounded like something that the whole family could be involved in, and we wanted them to get a good education and know how they can raise their own food, so it worked out good.
I've noticed that you do have all of your family helping out at different times of the year still.
Yeah.
Why did you use the pick-your-own method as opposed to working with retailers to sell your fruit?
We were enamored with the pick-your-own idea when we first started, but the basic reasons for pick-your-own is that you get the customer to choose their own degree of maturity, take care of them immediately, and enjoy the freshness and the extra value, the nutrition and everything that comes from pick-your-own. Most of the fruit that is obtained in a grocery store, well, all of it is picked basically immature so that it can stand the shipping and the storage. And so you lose a lot of that the good taste and the nutrition that's there in the fruit if you let it go. Well, and the same reason we don't do the wholesaling is in that the stores are not willing to take something that's completely ripe. They don't know how to handle or care to. They want it to stay on the shelf and never spoil. And so it just goes along hand in hand that if you really want it fresh, you want it fresh. And
it tastes different when it's fresh. It's like fresh sweet corn.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Is your fruit organic?
It probably would be classified as organic by many people, but we do not certify it. Over the years, we've learned a great deal from organic people and continue to do so. But I do not like to be put in a box with a lot of rules that tell me how to do things. I think there are many things to be learned yet about organic and non-organic. We do subscribe to a concept called integrated pest management, in which we can use many different resources to manage pests. And over the years, we've had pretty good success with keeping the worms out of the apples and the fruit from spoiling with very, very little chemical input. And so, like I say, we have a lot more to learn as well. But things are going our way with the softer chemicals than it used to be used. The toxic stuff is gone a long time ago, for us anyway. But the organic idea has been a good one.
So you use minimal spraying of pesticides. And some years, do you spray at all for some of your things?
Right. Last year, weather conditions were such that we didn't even get to spray our strawberries. So even if we needed to, we couldn't have. But this year we had like one spray on them early before the fruit sets on, and that was all. The blueberries did not get it or need any pesticides this year. So it's just an illustration that we're able to change our methods as we go along.
So it's safe to say that it's about as organic as you can be and minimal pesticides, so people don't have to worry as much about those things.
That's right. And for people that have an extreme allergic reactions to pesticides of any kind, we advise them to find a source that doesn't use any spraying whatsoever. Take their chances on the diseases and worms and go that way. But most of the people we've never had a complaint, let's put it that way, in 46 years. So.
Well, our family goes out to the berry patch about three times a year. We usually go out to pick strawberries, and then we'll come out to pick the blueberries, and then finally we wind up picking some apples and the raspberries that they're still producing. And so it's hard for me to say this, but do you have a favorite time of year at the berry patch?
I sure like the blueberry season. You see the grandparents with the grandchildren. You see the families, and some of the youngest little ones like to stand there by the bush and eat them and pick them for their parents. And I remember seeing a mother say, "Come on, it's time for us to go." And the little boy says, "But Mom, I'm picking blueberries." And he was right down there on the lower edge, and he was having such a good time. And I thought, this really is an excellent time for children to see where their fruit grows.
I've noticed there's a lot of families go there when I pick. Do you do anything special to attract families?
Well, I think one of the main things is they can bring their children. We like them to be supervised in the patch, especially at strawberry time when the fruit grows close to the rows and they can't really run and play. But, yes, the families do make it a point to come. Some bring a picnic lunch and enjoy the time at the farm.
There are quite a few pick-your-own farms that we're acquainted with, not close by, but that don't allow children under 12 years old. And we feel that's an error to keep from educating those kids as to the real purpose of being there and choosing their own food, you know.
What changes can we expect at the berry patch over the next several years?
I think I'm going to get my wife to retire sometime.
I hope not many. I think the schedule is going well, and we have enough variety here in the fruit section to interest most people.
Okay, so pretty much continue doing what you're doing and let people have a good time there.
There's always a replacement of trees and bushes that go on and to keep up with the demand and so on. And we have some excellent help in the last few years and recently, so we hope that they can keep that going for us.
You've introduced a new apple this year, I heard. What's your new apple that you're introducing?
Well, it isn't brand new, but it's we brought one for you to look at. I didn't realize how many people
you hold it
would
up to the
here.
Microphone. But, oh, there.
you can hear me take a bite of it in a bit.
it may be a new apple to many people called Z Star. It was named Z E E S T A R, and the cracker people didn't like that, so they changed it to Z E S T A R. But it's another variety from Minnesota, much like the Honeycrisp, but much earlier.
Yeah, it looks like a Honeycrisp. It has that round kind of.
It has a
glow, you know, like a little ball with.
It's actually a little sweeter and even more juicy than a Honeycrisp.
It's a pretty apple.
The fantastic part is it's so early.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. How do you get to the berry patch to pick apples and raspberries?
From Ames. Okay. We'd go east to Nevada on 30, Highway 30, and then south on S-14. S is in strawberry, 4 miles, and take a east turn on 280th Street. And the directions are on our website as well. And if I can mention the website, it's berrypatchfarmsingular.com. If you put an S on there and make it farms, you'll end up in Colorado. There's a friend of ours that has one closely named, but we have directions and actually have a map on the website.
Do people need to bring anything to pick fruit?
We have containers for every contingency. We do think that when they come out for the apples, if they want to bring their grocery bags that they take to the store that have the handles and that they're quite sturdy, that makes a beautiful apple-picking bag.
Are dogs allowed?
No, thank you. We'd like you to just come and enjoy the time at the farm. There are some cultural peoples that do not like dogs, and some children are quite afraid of dogs, so we ask you to leave them home. Thank you.
Are there any limits to picking?
No, not at all.
You can pick as much as you can pick.
Right.
And eat.
Right. Yeah.
You also sell at the farmer's market in Ames?
We do. When our labor allows, we're there. Judy's been coming as almost half the time or better. Mm-hmm. And we also go to Des Moines Farmers Market when we have the labor to do that. We've been going to farmers markets in Ames for almost 40 years. It's over 30-some. And even through their several reconstruction of the market, we're still there on Main Street.
Well, thank you so much for coming today and talking about the berry patch. We always make jams out of your fruits and freeze them and eat them throughout the year. So it's always delightful to have a reminder of the berry patch throughout the year. And thank you very much.
Judy just made some elderberry syrup last week and that's fantastic.
And you can buy some. There are every now and then there's some jams that you can buy at the berry patch. So.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, we appreciate it.
It's great. Yep.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Jim Werbel speaking with Dean and Judy Henry from the Berry Patch near Nevada. You see, you've got instructions how to get there. It's also on your website, so I appreciate that.
And we are KHOI, and this has been Local Talk, where we look at people, events, and stories in Central Iowa. And our guests today have been Conrad Kramer, Executive Director of White Rock Conservancy, and Dean and Judy Henry from the Berry Patch Farm. We also want to thank KHOI's environmentalist, Pat Schlarbaum, our reporter from KHOI, for checking in with us from Decorah, Iowa, to update us on what's happening there to restore the nest of the famous Decorah Eagles, who are known and loved around the world because of the Eagle Cam that broadcast their family life. One of their nests fell down, and Pat is out there in Decorah building a new platform for them. Best reality show ever.
Well, I'm glad you're listening to Local Talk, which is aired every day. I'm sorry, is aired on today at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen online to the show later on the homepage of our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you can find links to follow up on any people, places, or things you've heard about on today's show. Remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. So tell your friends and stay tuned to us when you're out of town.
KHOI is 3 years old this month, and we are celebrating this Sunday, August 23rd. So please mark your calendars and save the date. We want you to join us. There will be two things happening. Iowa's own media expert, Nicholas Johnson, will speak in honor of KHOI's anniversary. He'll be speaking on the current state and monumental changes happening in media these days, and he'll be making some predictions about where this is all headed. Spoiler alert, he sees an important role for community radio. Nicholas Johnson is best known as a historic and pivotal commissioner of the Federal Communications Commission who spoke up for citizen ownership of mass media. He served President Jimmy Carter as a presidential advisor in 2009, and according to him, mixed it up pretty intensely with President Nixon as well. And Johnson was selected by Yale University Press as one of the leading figures in the history of American law. So he's a great speaker, and we really hope you come and join the talk. He'll be speaking at the United Methodist Church in Ames. That's at 516 Kellogg, and he'll be speaking at 3 p.m. So please come and join us. The event is free. Mr. Johnson is coming from Iowa City on his own dime to help celebrate Ames and the community radio station here's third birthday. After Mr. Johnson's presentation, please join us at 4:30 for a reception and a birthday celebration. Bar La Tosca is hosting us at Main Street and Burnett Avenue, and there will be refreshments and music by Calais Sur, Latin band, also coming from out of town. So all events are at no cost. Donations are welcome, as always. We need support for community radio, so we welcome any donation you can give in honor of our birthday. Please join our Day of Food for the mind, spirit, and body in honor of KHOI's third birthday and 3 years of community radio in Central Iowa.
Speaking of creative collaboration, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop for volunteer reporters as well as a radio show. If you'd like to learn about reporting for radio and join our team as a reporter, as I did pretty recently, you will get trained. You will learn and love your community as a result. We do. Contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website at khoifm.org. And, of course, you're always welcome to drop by our studio in downtown Ames. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris, Tom Richards, from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Blue Boat Home by John Mayer.
Your participation as our audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you
again on the radio.
And see you on August 23rd at the lecture and party.
Look forward to seeing everybody there.